It's 7:44 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The declining coal industry has created new strains on our economic system here in Appalachia. Today, we learn about universal income and how it might impact the region.
The idea is that the benefit in rural spaces like Appalachia is that the money would go straight back into that local economy and help combat issues like brain drain and closing businesses and aging populations.
The story coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. In December, a fire at a U.S. steel plant crippled its ability to control its air pollution. For 3 months, the Pittsburgh area was blanketed with releases of sulfur dioxide, much higher than usual, and thousands reported suffering from poor air quality. Last week, the steelmaker finished repairing its pollution control equipment. For State Impact Pennsylvania, the Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier reports, the worries about air pollution and its health impacts remain.
From her backyard on top of a hill, Doreen Luff can see the Clairton Coke Works and smell it.
And when the wind blows, it blows the sulfur up here pretty good.
Luff says since moving to the community of Jefferson Hills 12 years ago, she could always smell the plant, some days worse than others. But after the December 24th fire at the Clairton plant, things got worse. On warm days, she had to keep her windows closed. Her kids' schools stopped outdoor recess on bad air days. And in January, her 9-year-old daughter, Katie, started having problems breathing. Luff blames the plant.
She's never been sick like that before, but now she has asthma. She has to use an inhaler. I get nauseous. I have headaches constantly.
Luff has complained to the Allegheny County Health Department, and she's not alone.
It makes me feel like I want to throw up.
Especially after I get off my bike, I'm wheezing. I've never had any issues breathing. I feel like I have asthma now.
It feels like I have, at the same time, razor blades and feathers in my throat and in my lungs.
That's Corey Powell and Jacob Fleming of nearby Glassport, and Luff's neighbor, Rita Derrick. The county health department has received thousands of air quality complaints since December. According to logs of some of those complaints obtained from the agency, residents warn the county of things like a strong burning smell, bad air, headaches, coughs, and smoke filling the whole valley. Some reported they couldn't even take their pets outside. The air was so bad. The U.S. steel plant in Clairton is North America's largest producer of coke, a key component of steelmaking. To make coke, the plant bakes coal at high temperatures in hundreds of ovens. Jim Kelly, the health department's deputy director, says the pollutant most people are smelling is sulfur dioxide, which is produced when the plant's sulfur-rich coke oven gas is burned off in flares.
So it's a pretty acrid smell. And obviously, you know, the problem with sulfur dioxide is in the presence of water, it forms sulfuric acid. So you can just imagine what that does when you breathe it into your lungs.
After the fire, U.S. Steel was emitting 5 times the amount of sulfur pollution as it's permitted for, Kelly said. Environmental groups and angry residents criticized the health department for not doing enough to protect air quality after the fire. But Kelly says the agency did what it could within the bounds of the law. He said the department couldn't just order the plant to close down while it fixed those controls, because he didn't think a judge would allow it. That's because coke ovens need to stay hot, or else they break down.
And to replace a coke oven is about $500 million. And so that's something a judge will take into consideration if we order them to cease operation.
In February, the county tried to order U.S. Steel to put the plant on a hot idle, where the plant stays hot but produces no coke. But the agency backed down when it learned that U.S. Steel said it would have taken longer to put the plant on idle than to just repair its pollution controls. To spread its sulfur emissions over a greater area, U.S. Steel has been flaring its coke oven gases at different locations. One of them overlooks the town of Glassport. Outside the Dollar Tree there where she works, Jennifer Magura says the air was so bad she got bronchitis this winter.
And I have a rescue inhaler, and I've been using it like nonstop. You know, I mean, I already emptied 2 in the last 2 weeks. And it's just hard to breathe. It's hard to walk because it's draining all my energy.
Magura is a smoker, but she says the kinds of breathing problems she's had this winter are different.
I mean, I've smoked all my life, so I know what that's like, and I know when things are worse than usual. Because when I go, like, downtown Pittsburgh, I'm not struggling as much to breathe, and that's, like, in the same day.
But some aren't so bothered by the plant's air pollution, so long as it's providing jobs. Hilda Lukert of Clairton said she couldn't really smell anything different in the air. She's lived in Clairton all her life, and her son works at the plant.
Well, everything needs to be cleaned up. You know, I mean, they do have to follow, they should follow guidelines. But as long as there's smoke coming out of there, I know men's going to have their job. So, I mean, I don't have any complaints about it.
1,200 people work at the Clairton plant, which supports another 1,800 jobs at two other U.S. steel mills nearby. Lukert remembers the days when the air was so bad in Clairton, you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. The plant is much cleaner than in those days, she says. And U.S. Steel says it's spending $65 million to clean the plant up.
Give them a chance to work on it. If they, you know, instead of shutting everything down and having all these men out of a job, you know, give them a chance to improve it.
Back at her home in Jefferson Hills, Doreen Luff says she's thought about moving, but she doesn't think her family can afford it right now. Her husband works for Verizon, and she's a stay-at-home mom.
I talked about moving, but I think we're financially unable to, so we're kind of stuck here like a lot of people are.
Her 9-year-old daughter Katie says on some days she's tried to hold her breath when she goes outside to wait for the bus.
And I'm not really good at holding my breath, and so I don't really, and I kind of smell like sulfur. I don't like that. I don't like it a lot. I don't like it at all.
Luff is glad the mill has put the pollution controls back on, but she says some days the air is still unbearable. She hopes her headaches go away and that her daughter's breathing gets better eventually. Reed Frazier, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
Historically, the coal industry has shaped the economic boom and bust cycle in our region. But major changes to the industry have created new strains on our economic system here in Appalachia. And some wonder if a radical fix is needed to support the poor or underemployed middle class. Some Democrats in Congress have pointed to an idea called basic universal income as one possible solution. Lovey Cooper, contributing editor with 100 Days in Appalachia, wrote an article about basic universal income. Roxy Todd spoke with her to ask what supporters and critics have to say.
So it's no shock to our listeners that the job market here in Appalachia and across West Virginia is not great. Part of your reporting looks at how issues like mechanization are partly to blame and why analysts say it's only expected to get worse. So tell us what economists predict for our region, for the next generation.
One person that we talked to found in her research that automation could eventually replace anywhere from 9 to 50% of American jobs. And we basically know that those in kind of those more manual labor type jobs will be affected first, right? And they're going to feel that hit the most, as opposed to other industries where automation might just mean that you can get better at your job or more productive. You know, it might take out some of that busy work that you have to do. So, but for most poor folks, it could mean that they're out of a job altogether.
So what I hear you're saying is that robots essentially are going to replace a lot more jobs in the future. And what some politicians are suggesting is maybe we should have a universal basic income. How would that work exactly?
So in theory, mechanization should mean that those folks are free to do other jobs, right? And ones that might fulfill them on a different level. Or enhance their whole town. But we're seeing more and more that without some kind of guaranteed source of security in places like Appalachia, where those dangerous jobs are historically, you know, literally the only thing supporting a local economy, like when those jobs leave, that's just more people who also have to leave to find more or other work. So basically, universal basic income as a concept is kind of exactly what it sounds like. It's a federal, no strings attached monthly payment to every adult in the country. It's kind of like expanded Social Security.
So I can imagine there's a number of critics who say, you know, we already have SNAP as well as other welfare programs that help pay for medical bills, et cetera. Why do we need something like this?
Yeah, folks who oppose a system like this, you're exactly right. That's their concern. They think that implementing a system like this would look just like a welfare system gone wild without, you know, accountability on either end of the bargain. But while SNAP and other government benefits cover certain aspects of living in poverty, they leave a lot of gaps when it comes to covering costs like childcare when you're working two jobs, or even just the gas to get between those jobs. Like temporary assistance to needy families and supplemental security income, they both have those qualifiers at the beginning, right? They do fill some of those gaps for families in need, but they're not intended to be a permanent solution. They're intended to be temporary or supplemental. And get you out of those hard times and not necessarily sustain you past them. Because of that, they come with these ideas of income and asset eligibility criteria, right? So that discourages people who receive these benefits from taking, you know, other part-time work or starting a business, like I said, or doing the other jobs that are available to them, because doing so might threaten their eligibility to keep getting that money. So, you know, what would you do in that situation? It keeps you from taking certain risks.
So what I'm hearing from you is that maybe people that are in support of a universal basic income say, hey, it's not just that people don't want to work or aren't willing to work, but that they need the training, they need the time to learn new careers, to adjust to new industries. Is that part of what they say is at the root of our underemployment here in Appalachia?
The idea is that the benefit in rural spaces like Appalachia is that the money would go straight back into that local economy and help combat issues like brain drain and closing businesses and aging populations, and kind of like Mark Zuckerberg said, give people that cushion to where they have the freedom to actually start a business or retrain themselves or find work that makes sense to them, as opposed to just being a person who is perpetually out of work.
I mean, I can see the point of I work really hard for what I bring home. Why should somebody else just get it for free? But then on the other hand, I hear you talking and I'm thinking, well, traditionally the American dream says that if you work really, really hard, you can get what you need. You can obtain your dreams. But things are just different now than they were 50 years ago. Things like cell phones and childcare and medical costs and rent and mortgage, all these costs have gone up in the past few generations. Did you talk to anybody you interviewed about the big overall looming question, which is capitalism doomed? Are we headed for a major economic collapse if something radical isn't done like this to overhaul our economic system?
Right. I mean, I personally think that capitalism has been doomed from the start, but if you can tell that already. But I mean, yeah, from a more clinical standpoint, like the things that you just listed out are not luxuries, right? They're basics of human survival. People are starting to realize that, especially in Appalachia, that treating these places as just like hubs for extractive industry, it isn't just like unsustainable from an economic standpoint. It's kind of inhumane to the people who live there. Like, it's less of a pessimistic view of capitalism and more of a growth-oriented view of how good things could be if we all kind of banded together and got our act together.
Lovey Cooper is a contributing manager with 100 Days in Appalachia. You can read her full report about universal basic income at our website, wvpublic.org. Award-winning bluegrass group Balsam Range made their first appearance on Mountain Stage earlier this year with songs from their newly released album, Eonic. This week's Mountain Stage Song of the Week is titled, If I Needed Someone, finds the band blending bluegrass with the Beatles.
One, two, three, go. But you see, now I'm too
That was Balsam Range's song, If I Needed Someone. You can hear the entire set from Balsam Range on this week's brand new episode of Mountain Stage. Catch Mountain Stage on Friday and Saturday nights at 8 right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Caitlin Tan, Jessica Lilly, Carol Lofton, Liz McCormick, Dave Mistich, Brittany Patterson, and Roxy Todd. Our news director is Jesse Wright. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.